Hi, I'm Stephanie Marland, and welcome back to the My Little Eye podcast. My Little Eye is my new thriller coming out on the 5th of April about a group of true crime addicts who meet online and attempt to catch a serial killer before the police. So what better reason to put together an online podcast series? In each episode, I'm chatting with expert guests about murder, crime, and the facts behind the fiction. And today I'm joined by best-selling crime writer Angela Clark.
Hello, thank you for having me.
So just to sort of kick off, you write the fantastic social media murder series. So all your books have got a strong social media aspect to them, and each one is focused around a different type of social media. Can you just tell us a bit about each of those books?
Sure. The first in the series is called Follow Me and is set on Twitter. I have two main protagonists, one who is called Nazarene Cudmore and works for the police, and one who is called Freddie Venton, who starts out wanting to be a journalist, but actually working in a overnight coffee shop in St. Pancras, looking for her kind of first big break or her first big story. And when she ends up embroiling herself in a case where a killer has started tweeting clues as to who their next victim is going to be, she manages to kind of put herself back together with Nazarene, who used to be an ex-school friend of hers, and they end up fighting crime together. But yeah, the first one is themed on Twitter, and yeah. It's themed on the idea that if there was a serial killer on Twitter and they tweeted clues about who their next victim would be, would you follow them? Would you retweet it? Would you answer the clues? You know, what would you kind of do in that situation? And what if the serial killer started to follow you back? And then they return in Watch Me, which is themed on Snapchat. And obviously Snapchat's kind of unique selling point is that you can send images or messages that are only viewable for a set amount of time before they disappear.
Yeah.
So in that case, it is a question of you have 6 seconds to view this message and 24 hours to save the girl's life. Mm. Nice to have a deadline.
Yeah. Ticking clock.
Exactly. And then the third in the series is called Trust Me, and that is themed on live streaming. And it involves a case where a serious assault is live streamed and then the account is closed, and how you work backwards from the point where you know a crime has taken place, but you don't know the names of the people, you don't know where the crime took place, you don't know, you know, it's kind of the reverse of a locked room.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you have to work it backwards from there.
So what was it that attracted you to making social media the key to that series and those books?
I didn't actually set out to write crime. I actually set out to write about social media itself. I used to write kind of upbeat, peppy, sort of fashion-based stuff. My first book was called Confessions of a Fashionista.
Yeah.
And involved real-life stories from my time spent working in the fashion industry. And I'd started work after that on a young adult novel in a kind of a similar vein.
Right.
And then I got sick. And I very carelessly dislocated my neck and couldn't walk for 3 months. And I couldn't work for about a year. During that time, my world shrunk completely down to me staring at the ceiling for a long period of time. When I was able to use technology again and look at phones, the only access I had to a social life, the only kind of interaction I had, the majority of interaction I had was online, and Twitter became a real lifeline for me in particular. I spent a lot of time, you know, talking just like you would do normally on, you know, but instead of going out and chatting to friends, I did it online. So I talk about books, I talk about reading. You know, I found people who had the same condition as me and the same kind of mobility issues as me and bonded over things like that. And it became my real kind of lifeline and safe space. As I got stronger and was able to come back into the working environment, I wrote a couple of short articles, one for The Vagenda and one for The Guardian, both of which had a feminist stance. And lo and behold, I was trolled. Hurrah! Right. So suddenly my safe space, the place that had been keeping me going, the place that had been giving me that comfort, actually became somewhere where people were threatening in quite horrible graphic terms to rape me in front of my parents and all of this kind of, you know, really fun things.
Seriously disturbing stuff.
And I became kind of fascinated with the idea of what happens, you know, to somebody. Why ever kind of there's been that breakdown where you think it's okay to send messages like that to somebody that you don't know. And as part of that, I decided to sort of de-scare it or de-frighten the situation and do a little bit of investigation. So I found some of the people that had sent me these messages. So one of them ended up being a guy who had a six-year-old daughter and sat on the PTA board of his six-year-old daughter's school.
Wow.
Another one was a 19-year-old young woman who was studying economics at university. And it was just kind of absurd to think that what had happened to these people, that they thought it was cool or okay or that they felt the need to send these horrible graphic threats to somebody they'd never met. And I was like, well, what's happened in social media? That, you know, why have we done this? You know, where's this disconnect? Is it because, one of the reasons I think it is because we often forget that there's a real person on the other end. And then I thought about the extension of that, which is what's the kind of extreme you can take that to, which is what if the other person is going to be killed, is going to be murdered, you know, how would people interact, what would they do? And I wrote Follow Me from that. So I thought I was writing, you know, the great internet book.
Yeah.
And then I gave it to my agent and she went, oh, there's loads of dead bodies, darling, you've written crime. And I was like, oh, that's fun, social media and crime, oh yes, I like the way they intersect. And boom, that was it, the series was born.
So the accidental crime writer.
Exactly.
Excellent. And you talked earlier about your series duo. So rather than two cops, you've got one who's you know, DS Nazarene Cudmore that you've talked about, and then you partner them with a journalist, Freddie Venton. So both do have that investigative aspect to the job, but only one of them is bound by police procedure. Was that the attraction of pairing them? Was that factoring in there, or was that just a happy accident?
It was a happy accident. I wanted to write a kind of anti-establishment character and have her kind of involve herself in a procedural crime.
Yeah.
I'd spoken to, when I was working on it, I'd spoken to a person who worked for the police for 10 years in Trident, and she had never had a social media account because she and her colleagues had been understandably dissuaded from using social media because of anonymity issues, etc.
Sure.
And I thought that that was really fascinating, that so much can be learned from social media, and if you had a crime specifically that took place on social media, what would that mean if you weren't used to it? And with Twitter, I think it's not so much the kind of practical details of using it. I think that's fairly straightforward. I think it's kind of the unspoken rules that you only pick up by using something for a period of time.
Yeah, sure.
So I like Facebook, I think is very intuitive. It's very straightforward. It's kind of how people talk. It's much more obvious. Whereas Twitter, there's kind of its own language, its own rules, its own kind of etiquette of what you do and don't do. And if you suddenly needed somebody that was able to translate that for you, and that person also happened to be sort of anti-police and anti-establishment, and what kind of conflicts that would bring up. And then, you know, let's throw in the fact that they were ex-school friends and they haven't spoken to each other for 8 years, and it makes it an interesting mix.
Yeah, absolutely. And so what's your writing process? Would you say you're a plotter or a pantser?
I don't know. That's a really lame answer. I kind of do both.
Okay.
And it sort of depends on the book and also depends on my deadline and how close I am to it. I come up with kind of six plot points, key plot points that I know are going to happen. So I know I'm going to go from A to B and six things that are going to happen in between. But I design those plot points. So they're kind of based on what I would do.
Right.
And then what happens is, you know, Freddie or Naz get there and they go off in a completely different direction because they're different people from me and they would do things completely differently. Usually Freddie does things completely differently, I have to say. So I guess it's kind of a weird combo of both. Like, I have a plot, but then suddenly the pants thing kind of comes in and we go in a completely different direction unexpectedly.
Excellent.
For Watch Me, for example, I didn't realise who the murderer was. I thought I knew who the murderer was until I got in the room with the murderer right at the end of the book. And then I was like, oh, it's somebody else.
Oh, that's really cool, though.
It was really exciting. And I was like, oh, my God, I can't believe it's so-and-so. And I was like, okay, that's weird. So
Oh, I like that. It's like the book revealed it to you.
Yes. Right. Yeah. 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 Cool. Absolutely. Which, you know, it's great for twists.
So. Yeah. Yeah. So how do you research the books, both the kind of police aspects of it and the sort of social media and the journalism side?
It depends on which aspect I'm looking at. I tend to have like a first draft. Right, I know what I'm doing. I know roughly what I'm doing. If I have a big aspect, so for example, in the later books, Freddie has become a criminal analyst working with the police. I went and spoke to a former criminal analyst and worked out what their job involved and what they did on a day-to-day basis and et cetera, because I needed that to put that in. If it's more kind of specific, finite details, I'll go back and research that afterwards. In terms of social media, it changes so fast. So that's often the hardest thing to do. You know, the fact that the social media itself is always developing and always changing, and the way people use it is always developing and changing, and kind of keeping up on that side. I do spend a lot of time online.
In research mode.
For the second book, I went on to a lot of men's rights activists, kind of platforms and forums, which was quite interesting. So I guess I was there under false pretenses. I was pretending to be one of them. There's a revenge porn theme that runs through the second book, and I did go onto a site that specialised in teaching other people how to hack into people's smartphones or into their cloud and lift photos without them knowing, and saw the photos that had been lifted and were being shared, which was quite depressing.
Yeah.
Especially because it's all of them were young teenage girls and, you know, 14-year-olds, 15-year-olds. It was distressing.
Yeah.
And it's hard to do things like that. You know, I think at the end of that kind of research day, I kind of had to put myself in bed with a duvet and kind of fear for humanity.
Yeah, absolutely.
You get back up the next day and kind of get back on with it. But yeah, so a different range of things depending on what's needed. And I'm very lucky. I've got a good few number of cops or ex-cops that I can call on and ask for kind of details and favours if I need it as well.
Yeah, yeah, brilliant. A good source.
Yeah, absolutely. Several good sources, yeah. And I just repay them in alcohol. It's always the best way.
Yeah. Yeah, I found that works.
It's funny though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, they respond well to that. Yeah. Also, you know, then when they're drunk, you get more out of them.
Yeah. Although often they say, don't put that in a book.
Yes. Yeah. But you can have the colour of it.
Yeah. Yeah. you're very active on social media yourself, as we've been talking about.
Not at the moment. I'm trying to finish my latest, okay. But I'm not online at the moment.
Social media blackout.
Yes, definitely right. Not online. Okay. If you see me there, shouldn't be there.
So when you are online, what would you say your kind of favourite platform is?
Oh God, I'm such a terrible strumpet because I move between, like, I'm so disloyal. It depends what kind of, it's changed. So I went through a period of being absolutely obsessed with Twitter and very rude about Facebook and derisory about Facebook. And then I've shifted to being more into Facebook, in particular kind of private groups on Facebook. And then I'll go through periods where I just want to look at photos and take photos of sunset. So I'll be on Instagram and that's the best thing in the world. I just think I, you know, got very loose morals. I'm happy to hang out in any situation and love that for that moment in time.
Very versatile.
Yes. Yeah. It's good to have range.
Yeah, absolutely. So as well as writing crime fiction, you are a screenwriter, a playwright, and a radio presenter. So, I mean, how do you fit everything into your day?
Badly. Really badly. No, seriously, badly. I don't really have a set day. I'm not very good at doing sort of a 9 to 5 sort of thing. It's more a sort of a run around for as long as possible until I fall asleep sort of situation, and cram as many things in and apologise a lot to all the people that are waiting for things. But I'm just basically very greedy, and I like to do everything, and I don't like saying no.
Right.
So I should probably work on that. I need to have more balance and more boundaries and you know, cut back on stuff, but it's not really my style.
I say you seem to be incredibly productive.
The volume and
amount of projects.
Well, no, actually,
amazing.
I think it's because of this. I sleep a lot. I think sleep is very important.
Yeah.
But like in the day. So So I can get 2 work days out of one day by having a sleep in the middle.
Right.
And I think a lot of people would be like, oh, that's lazy or that's unproductive. But I think it's the opposite. I think that's the secret, is a nice, like, tactical day nap. And then you get another fresh start and another bang at everything. And I think that's the way forwards.
I might have to try that.
Oh, do. Yeah. Do. Yeah. If you can do it, because not everybody can sleep during the day. Yeah. Can you sleep during the day?
If I'm tired enough.
See, I can do a nice kind of like 20 minutes. You could meditate during the day. I think that would probably do the same thing, like halfway through.
I think I'd have to have blackout blinds. I'm like a chicken in the... or a bird, mostly a chicken. But I used to keep chickens, but you know, like with the dawn, if it's light, I'm awake, and if it's dark, I'm asleep. So, you know.
Your circadian rhythms are very strong.
Okay, that. See, let's not chicken.
My circadian rhythms are way out of whack. But what often happens is the downside of that is 3 a.m, I'm still awake.
Oh, wow.
Not helpful.
No. So, you know, sometimes on the kind of, you know, aspiring writers forums, people are sort of asking about what do they need to do as a writer, as an author to get noticed, and what should they be doing on social media? When should they get into social media? So what would be your kind of top tips for people about social media?
I think it's important to have an authentic voice because that's what people respond to. What you don't want to be is a walking advert. So you don't want to be out there kind of saying, buy my book. Bad idea. You want to be out there sharing what you're comfortable sharing about yourself, whether that's that you post lots of dog photos or that you particularly like real crime dramas or things like that. And you're going to build real, genuine relationships with that because that's what social media is really, and that's when people do it well. It's because they are building relationships, they're gaining friendships, they're gaining people who are interested in what you have to say and building on that. So I think it's to be authentic or as authentic as you are comfortable as being, and to enjoy it, because I think you can tell if somebody is doing it in a perfunctory manner. And I think personally it's better to do less better than it is to try and do everything. So you're better off picking one platform and the platform that you respond the most to, that you like the best, and building on that, than trying to try and do everything and stay on top of everything. I don't think that's really possible to do. So be authentic, be yourself, and make sure that you are on, you know, be focused.
Brilliant. Yeah, great advice. So a huge thanks to Angela Clark for joining me today on the podcast. Her latest book is Trust Me, and she's got a new radio show that's starting. It's 3 books on at 12 p.m. on womensradioshow.com every Monday. It's womensradiostation.com. Yay. And so make sure that you tune in every Monday at 12 p.m. and listen to Angela talking 3 books. So be sure to join me here next week for another episode of the My Little Eye podcast. But first, here's a short extract from the audiobook, which is available now.
The hallways painted bright cerise. It had been migraine-inducing enough at the best of times, even if his head wasn't already pounding from dehydration and lack of sleep. Dom looks up the stairs. They're steep. Typical Victorian with those narrow treads that he can get barely half his foot on. He glances at Abbott, who's making slow work of zipping his suit. Better get up there. Abbott nods. Waits for Dom to go first. Dom knows why. This many years into the job and you've got a flood of crime scene memories. So many dead bodies. Too many. It's like your brain tries to second guess what you're about to find, or floods you with old images in an attempt to desensitize you before you see the real thing again. It doesn't work, though. Can't. It's not like any dead body is ever a good thing. He grasps the banister and takes the stairs 2 at a time. Abbott keeps close behind. The stairs creak. Stepping into the flat, he takes a moment to get a sense of the place. It's a decent size for a one bed in this part of town. Newish furniture, with lots of glass and leather in the open plan living space. Modern, with a nod towards pretentious. Strip floorboards. The walls are painted burgundy. Kate Adams and her boyfriend must earn a decent wage to afford this place. The look is contemporary, like a copy of some celebrity pad. Dom imagines that matters to them. On the glass coffee table, there are two glasses of red wine. One looks half drunk, the other untouched. An indication Kate Adams had company before she died. Dom nods at the glasses. Same as the last two. Yeah, CSIs are on it, Abbott says. Unlikely he's left prints, though. True. He hadn't at the homes of the previous victims. Her wine or the killer's? I'll get that checked with the boyfriend. Dom nods. Photographs are done? Good, Dom says. But he doesn't mean it. He was last to arrive and the team of professionals. There's no reason they should have waited for him. He knows that. He unclenches his fists a finger at a time. Rolls his shoulders. Once and again. He needs a clear, logical head-on for what comes next. Nothing looks out of place. No sign of a struggle. His DS doesn't say it, but Dom hears the implication. For all their poking, the CSIs haven't found anything useful yet. Noted. Bedroom? Abbott points him towards the doorway on their far right. Over there? The CSIs look up, and he sees one of them roll their eyes at the other. He tries to ignore it. Spots Emily Renton, pathologist, standing in the doorway. The white paper suit does nothing for her mumsy figure. She raises an eyebrow. So nice of you to join us, Dom. It was meant to be my day off, all right? She laughs. Her glasses slip down her nose and she pushes them back into place with a gloved finger. So I'm told. And did you have a nice rest? As usual with her, he can't help but smile. For about 2 minutes. And now you're here. She nods into the bedroom. Her tone becomes more serious. Seems we've got another one. Similar MO, but give me a minute, yeah? I need to take a look before we dive into the detail. Not a problem. Emily moves into the bedroom, speaking to people out of Dom's view. Can we clear the room, folks? Take 10. Two techs file out. Emily follows. All yours. He nods his thanks. Ignores the mutters of the techs who've stopped in the lounge. He can guess what they're saying. That the IPCC are after him. That he's not long for this job. Keeping his gaze low, he steps into the room. Inhales a faint aroma of vanilla. Out of the corner of his eye, he sees candles, burnt down low, which line the floor at the foot of the bedstead. He catches a glimpse of rose petals, bright scarlet, against the cream of the duvet. He doesn't look up, not yet. Knows that he's stalling. Also knows that if this is like the previous two crime scenes, she'll be on the bed. Part of him doesn't want to look. So he stands there, not moving. Every sound seems magnified. His breath, his heartbeat, the steady dripping of a tap in what he assumes is the ensuite. He's still got the headache. It's worse now, jabbing at his temples. He turns to face the bed. Deja vu. It's her, but of course, it can't be. But she's an exact replica of the last two victims, of Jenna Malik, found in her musty bedsit in Crouch End, and of Zara Breton in her Canal View studio flat in Camden. He takes a step closer. Keeps looking. She's got the same loosely curled, shoulder-length hair, and the same shade of medium brown, and from this distance, her face seems identical. Fresh, dewy skin, a pinkish bloom to her cheeks and lips. Pretty. She's wearing the same makeup too. Black eyeliner, peacock blue eyeshadow, purple lipstick. Very 80s. She's naked. He stops at the boundary made by the candles. Her face is clearer in close-up. The resemblance is unnerving, but now he sees her healthy glow is from makeup, not life. Her lips are full and slightly pouted. Her eyes are fixed open, again like the others. He looks into her unseeing gaze. Peaceful. That's the first word that comes to him. There's no blood, no obvious cause of death. He's not fooled, though. This is how the other victims looked, and there was nothing peaceful about what had been done to them. He keeps looking at her. Needs this uninterrupted time to get a sense of the place, to try and feel what she felt, to understand more about the killer. The silence helps him find what others miss. One thing here is different. It's not here. She's the same, like a carbon copy of the other two, but the MO is slightly different. There's no Rose. What does that mean? He checks again, slower this time. Scattered on the duvet, rose petals form a circle around her, but there's no actual rose here. Dom turns, scanning the room, looking to see if the rose has been placed somewhere else. Like the lounge, this room looks normal, if there ever is such a thing. There's no hint of a struggle. Nothing seems knocked out of place or broken. Dom's gaze lingers over the dressing table. He notices how shiny the surface is, like it's been freshly polished. It's the only furniture that has. On top of the mirror, there's a layer of dust. Same with the bedside cabinet. Something else draws his attention. Makeup and potions are heaped in a messy pile on the floor beside the dressing table. It's an anomaly. Everything else about this flat is clean and ordered. He nods at Emily for the CSIs to re-enter the room, beckons one over to the dressing table. Dom's seen her before at another crime scene. Petite, with freckles. He tries to remember her name. Penny, Paula, something like that. It doesn't come to him. Hey. He points to the bottles and pots heaped beside the table. Make sure you get these. The CSI nods, unsmiling. Cheers. Dom wonders if the media are the only ones who've been losing faith in him. He turns back to the girl on the bed. What happened, Kate? Why did he do this? Why do it to you?